Blog.
That's right. Woo! Special New Year's edition of the Kayak Fishing Radio Late Show. Man, every time I hear this intro music, I love it. I just want to, you know, I should be in a club somewhere, like enjoying a premium adult beverage or something. But anyway, I am Rob DeVore, otherwise known as a Bad Batcast. And you can catch up with me and my stuff, things that I do on my blog, which is the always dreaded www.abadbatcast.com. And, you know, tonight's show, we're kind of focusing on a little bit. You know, I know it's New Year's and everything. We're going to kind of talk about our year in review as kayak anglers. And, me for one. And also, something else I want to touch on a little bit is, what we're going to do in the coming year. You know, what kind of a bucket list, as it were, do we have? Within reason. I'm not, some of us, can't always go to Costa Rica like some people can. I guess you could say that would be on a bucket list of sorts. But, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Me, for instance, I had a good year fishing this year, man. I had a lot of good fishing trips, and I got to say that my personal favorite trips that I went on fishing this year were always at night. It always seems like I had a good nighttime bite going on, fishing dock lights for snook and trout and redfish. And it always seemed like we had a good night every time that we'd go out fishing the dock lights over the summer, and it's nice and warm and it's quiet, and it's just a great time to go fishing. That's what I would consider my specialty, is dock light fishing here in the Tampa Bay area around Clearwater and Dunedin, Bel Air. I'm kind of Pinellas County is my favorite thing, favorite place to fish, in the area. So, anyway, it looks like we got a caller. I bet you this is Isaac the Nothing Miller. And do I have you there, Isaac?
You got me.
All right, man. Isaac the Nothing Miller from Portland, Oregon. How you doing, man?
Oh, not too bad.
Yeah?
A little chilly out tonight, but
Did you get caught up in any of that that nasty blizzard snow? And I turned on the news there for a minute, and it was like snowpocalypse 2010.
No, it wasn't that bad. Seattle got a little bit of snow. We got a little bit here in Portland, but none of that snow stuck to the ground. But
well, that's good.
It's cold. It certainly is cold, though. So.
Now, does it normally snow up there in Portland?
A couple times a year we'll get 4 inches or so, and that's the extent of it. Definitely nothing massive. They got on the East Coast here recently. We get a little bit, nothing major, and it goes away in a couple days.
You're not throwing fish right now, are you?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like you're doing the fish throwing thing, man.
Oh, right now? No, yeah. No, not at this moment. No, not at this moment. I'm home. I'm done for the day.
Awesome.
I'll be up in 8 hours throwing fish around.
So what would you say was your best fishing trip, you know, in 2010? Anything stick out, like, as kind of a watermark for you?
That's a real tough. You know, your last fishing trip is always the most memorable in my book. I went out fishing a couple weeks ago with Martin's guide service, did a little bit of sturgeon fishing from his boat. Prior to that, you know, kayak fishing, my last trip was, we had a real lucky, very, very break in the water 3 weeks ago. We were able to hit the salt water, and that was really cause crazy. And that's one of the main delectable fish here on the West Coast.
Hey, I'm kind of losing you a little bit there. I don't know if you got me on a speakerphone or what, but I'm getting a lot of noise and interference, and it sounds like you're off in the distance, man.
Oh, sorry, that's my kitchen.
I'm sorry?
That was probably just me being in the kitchen.
Area for me to be, you know.
How's that? It's a little bit better.
It was there for a second, but now it's gone back into, I don't know if it's, say something and we'll see.
Now you'll have me.
All right, gotcha. That's a lot better, man.
I have headset problems again.
Oh.
Ditch the headset and everything's better.
I have one of those Bluetooth little, you know, things that I use for, like a little Bluetooth headset that I use when I'm playing video games on my PS3. And it's a nice little, you know, it's a nice little thing to use. You know, you can talk to your friends, or, you know, I play the Call of Duty series with my brother a lot online. And when that battery goes bad, man, the sound quality just goes down the tubes. And, you know, you got about, it gives you about a 30-second warning before the battery dies on it, man. So, you know, but it's great while it works.
While it works. Yeah, one was actually a hardwired headset.
Ah.
But I'm pretty well known for abusing electronics. my iPhone's been in the water a couple of times, so.
Oh, man.
Oh, well. I'll just
those
get rid
aren't,
of it. No problems.
Those aren't very cheap to replace.
No, they're not. But like I was saying, you know, my last kayak trip was 3 weeks ago. That was ling cod crazy. So it's, you know, that was definitely a highlight. Flying out with the yakangler.com guys, met up with them in Louisville, and we drove all the way down to Georgia for the very first Georgia kayak fishing tour event. Was definitely a very awesome moment of 2010 as well. I went down there wanting to catch a striped bass. They're very, very rare here in Oregon. You got to head down to southern Oregon and be at the right spot at the right time as the stars are aligned just right. It's ridiculous to catch them here in Oregon. But I did catch one there in Georgia, despite horrible water conditions, and so that made me happy. So that was definitely awesome.
Is that a picture of you, like, when you're, it looks like you're fishing in chocolate milk or something?
I think
it was on your Facebook page or something.
It was some of the dirtiest water I have ever seen. You know, I've heard, you know, I've referred to water as being chocolate milk before, but this stuff was probably 4 inches of visibility.
Wow.
It was nasty.
You must have just, what'd you use, a lure or bait?
I was lure fishing. I had when I was in Louisville, the first time I met up with the guys from Yak Angler, Mark and Adam, I went to Bass Pro Shops for my first time. We don't have one here in Oregon or Washington. My nearest Bass Pro Shops 700 miles away, so I'd never been to one before.
Yeah, those are awesome, man. I remember my last time at Bass Pro Shops was in Fort Myers, and I was coming back from the Keys, and we spent 3 hours in that place, man. It's definitely Mecca for fishermen.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, we've got Cabela's here. Well, kind of here. It's 100 miles away, and it's pretty cool also, but had never been to a Bass Pro Shops. I bought a little crawfish patterned crankbait, Bass Pro Shops brand, and caught the, it was a tiny striped bass. You know, it wasn't huge by any means. It was tiny, but it was still a striped bass. I caught that fish on it, and that same lure, I've caught smallmouth, largemouth, and even rainbow trout on that same exact lure.
No kidding. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely my go-to lure of 2010. There's no question about that.
So is it like is it a natural color, or is it like a chartreuse or anything?
No, it's a crawfish pattern.
Yeah.
So it's red and black. And it has a matte finish to it. So it's not shiny at all. There's no flash on it whatsoever.
That's awesome. Sometimes that's what they key in on, man.
Exactly.
Well, one of my favorite, I actually got to go fishing with the Yak Angler guys, Mark and Adam, and Chip, and the Clone. And they all came down. Mark's family lives in Seminole, which is just down the road from me. And those guys came down, rented a car, got some kayaks from, I don't know, from Chuck or somebody. And I met up with those guys out at Sand Key, which is right here in Clearwater. It's a, pretty nice pass that dumps into some really nice grass flats. And they showed up, and we went out fishing. And the only one that didn't catch anything that whole day was Adam. And but we got some trout. We got on some speckled trout, and we had some fun. It was fun. It was a great trip. And then we went to there's a wing place right down the street called Mugs on Missouri. It's right on Missouri Avenue in Clearwater. And I'll tell you right now, I'm not working for them or anything like that, but those are by far the best wings on the face of the earth. So if you're a wings person and you're in Clearwater, definitely check out Mugs on Missouri, because that place, they have all these, all sorts of different flavors that you can get them in. And to me, there's nothing better than a hot barbecue style wing. It's wing sauce, like your standard buffalo chicken wing sauce with they mix it with honey barbecue sauce, and it's just a fantastic, it's a sweet, but it also has that that kick to it too, so it's great. What's that?
If you like wings, you got to get up here to Portland. I'll hook you up with a local place here called Fire on the Mountain.
Wow. And is it Fire on the Mountain?
It is. Oh, there's nice pictures floating around on YouTube about me eating one of their wings.
Oh, no.
And, I ended up eating like four of them, but they took me quite a while.
It's not like one of those things on Man versus Food or anything, is it?
Oh, it definitely could be.
Well, I'll tell you, Miss Batcast is on the chat room right now. And actually, this is going to, inspire some jealousy in a lot of people. She's actually right now listening to the show in San Jose, Costa Rica.
Yeah, okay. I'm not talking to her.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally envious and jealous right now. And she's down there, and she's actually going fishing on the Pacific coast there sometime in her trip. She's going to be down there for like 10 days. And I'm very, very envious. I've almost gone to Costa Rica several times. It's like one of the places that I really, really want to go. You know, it's definitely on the main bucket list there. You know, and some of the fishing down there is just ridiculous. But I'm telling you, I just definitely want to get down there. And she's doing something that I've always wanted to do down there. So I'm quite envious. But really glad. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I hope she's getting some fly fishing lessons while she's down there. You know, I think I remember saying before that she shouldn't take lessons from you. Not to say that you're a bad fly angler or anything, but you know, it's always good to have a third party do the teaching.
Oh, absolutely. I know it. You're right. You know, Lefty Cray says this, that, you know, he can teach anybody about fly fishing as long as they're not, as long as he's not dating them.
Exactly.
So, you know, hey, her dad fly fishes. So, and he just picked up a kayak, a fishing kayak this week. So, and he's a, you know, from what she says, he's, you know, really used to fly fish a lot up north for trout and, you know, things like that. So he knows what he's doing.
Cool. So I got to mention my favorite lure of 2010. What was yours?
My favorite? Well, I have a couple.
I know there had to be at least one lure you threw every time you were on the water.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. I don't leave home. My go-to lure is a red flake quarter ounce DOA shrimp. Okay. Don't ask me why, but the red flake produces so much. I've caught so many different species of fish on that thing. It's not even funny. And my second favorite that I picked up from C.A. Richardson from Flats Class TV is the Mirolure Mirodine XL. It's like the big brother for the Mirodine, you know, Mirolures. You know, it's not that much bigger than a regular Mirodine, but it suspends at 12 inches, which is perfect on the grass flats. And it's just a great bait, man. I love that.
Nice.
So are my, you know, and the Yak Angler guys, when they were here, they were laughing at me because I kept doing my DOA shrimp promotional commercial, you know, like the, you know, when you watch the fishing shows and they always have the host doing some sort of a, you know, like a lure commercial or something, you know, and it's like really funny because you can tell that they're like reading the cue card. It's like totally mm-hmm. funny. They were cracking up over that, but we had a blast when they were here. And I'm really, you know, I really wish I could get up to the Jacksonville big Talbot Island trip. You know, all the guys are coming down. But, you know, right now it's just not feasible, and, you know, Miss Batcast can't get off work. So, you know, that wouldn't be very much fun without going with her, too. So, you know, and that's President's Day weekend in February in Jacksonville, Florida there. So it'll be a blast. So tell me, so what do you got on your bucket list this year as far as, well, I mean, for next year, as far as 2011 goes?
Yeah. 2011, you know, I actually just made a blog post today of goals and resolutions for 2011.
Yeah.
So kind of good timing there because I've almost rehearsed all the answers. Number one, more fishing. You know, I love to fish. I fished 100 some odd days this year. I'd like to make it more. And the main reason for that is, you know, yeah, it's nice to be out there fishing on the water, but the more time you put into fishing, the more you learn about the fish, the more effective of a fisherman you become.
Absolutely. You know,
so
Mark,
I just want to do more fishing just to be a better angler.
Absolutely. You know, the landing crew, you know, Mark Wheeler up in Virginia there,
mm-hmm.
He said exactly, almost exactly the same thing. You know, he was going to really work on his, you know, bass fishing tactics, you know, and really figure those things out and, you know, get in there to where he was, you know, you basically know those fish, man. And you really have to do that to a certain degree. You really have to get in there and, you know, it's almost a scientific approach. You know,
it absolutely is.
Yeah, there's so much biology goes into it, it's not even funny. And, you know, people think, well, you know, you know, that's a bunch of stuff. I just go there and I you know, I just talk to the fish and they show up and bite. And which is true. You know, I mean, a lot of people do actually do that. And it works. I've heard of people, you know, sweet talking the fish and talking to the fish. And I think that it sounds really stupid, but there really is, you know, something to that. Okay, I got another caller on the line. Let me see who we have here.
Yeah.
Okay, it's area code 757. How you doing, man?
What's going on?
How are you?
Doing okay.
Is this Mark again?
We last talked. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you know, I don't know if you knew Isaac, but I did the 8 o'clock show too, and because you know there was just this miscommunication with me and Chip, and I didn't realize that he wasn't doing a show tonight at the 8 o'clock show, and I kind of went and you know I didn't see any advertisement for it, so I thought, well, you know, sometimes he waits for the last minute. And I'll go ahead and, you know, post something up on Facebook. And then he left a message that said, I'm not doing the show tonight. And I was like, uh-oh. So I just decided that since I advertised it, I might as well do the 8 o'clock show too. And landing crew, Mark, is he's on the line with us now. He was at the 8 o'clock show. So I know that I'm not Chip. And, you know, I was just holding the clipboard, you know, like come on, Isaac. If you're a football fan, think of a good clipboard holding, you know, backup quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, Seahawks current backup.
Exactly. I never know their names.
Yeah, I can picture it, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he was just in that game against the Bucs the other day. But
yep. And he's
going to
be starting again this weekend.
Yep. Anyway,
could use like John Kitna, but then again, he's now playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and he's not doing too bad, you know.
You know what? That's a great Northwest connection there. Kitna's from the Northwest here, so.
Yeah. And you know, maybe a Tavares Jackson or something, you know, I don't know. But anyway, I was for the 8 o'clock show, what those guys are for their teams. The Charlie Batch always sticks in for me. You know, they're not really good. They're kind of, they can be old, but, you know, and they're great at holding the clipboard. But, you know, when the starter is on the rack, you know, sometimes there's nothing better than having a guy out there that can hand the ball off like that, you know. But not to be confused with sports radio in general. so we're back. We're here at Kayak Fishing Radio, the late show. And so tell me, you know, Mark, when's the next time you're going fishing, man?
I will be going fishing either Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah? And
busting the ice on the river.
Oh, man. Is it frozen up there where you're at, Isaac?
No, we don't know what frozen water is.
Isn't that weird? It can be, like, one of the coldest places on Earth, and it, like, nothing freezes. You know, there's places in England that are like that, in Ireland, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, here in the Northwest, we're pretty much on that same parallel.
Same latitude, yeah.
Yeah.
I was,
I just don't get that.
When I was over there, you know, Florida boy, you know, being in that weather, you know, to me, I was just like, it was hell for me, you know. Anything under 60 degrees is winter, you know. And I was like, man, this must be like holy hell in the wintertime. And they said, no, it never snows. I was like, man, you got to be kidding me. So Mark, are you doing some, you doing freshwater? You doing saltwater? What's going on for this weekend?
Freshwater for me. I've got, since the 8 o'clock hour, I've been looking at my maps, and I found what looks like a secluded hole that I know about. I've been there before, but it's one of those things where being in a kayak is the only way you can get back there, because I've actually got to jump up on a couple of fall downs and drive the kayak over the fall downs to get to it.
Yeah. That's good stuff. And you know nobody's back there. And nobody goes back there.
It's along a guy's house. And the guy never fishes, and he's already given me the okay to come back there, you know, as long as I'm quiet.
Nice. Hey, do you guys ever use Bing Maps, like, for scouting stuff out? Because I use that a lot, you know, for just, you know, my preliminary scouting, I use that, you know, just because a lot of times you can see all the contours, and you can get down really detailed, you know. Where you're at and you know, sort of, you know, it gives you contours and, you know, you get an idea whether it's deeper or not. So it's,
I use like Bing Maps and MapQuest to find spots.
Yeah, me too.
You know, you get on there and you know that there's a, you know, you start looking around, you know, high enough that you can pinpoint little ponds and little, you know, fingers and things like that off of, you know, places that you usually fish, but you can use it as an opportunity to find that spot. And then, you know, just the same way you would do hunting. You know, you could go to the landowner and you go, hey, listen, I noticed that there's a small pond behind your house, you know, around the corner, and, you know, those tree rows. Yeah, that one. I was wondering if I could, you know, head back there and you know, take my kayak and jump in there. Would that be okay? You know, a lot of times like, sure, I've never fished there, you know, the cows go in there, but that's about it. And you go in there and you pull out bass left and right, and it's like, this is great.
Yeah, you know, and that's really funny. You know, where I fish at night, okay, it's a lot of residential docks, okay, and, you know, people use, you know, they leave their lights on their docks most of the time. And, you know, we're fishing around basically virtually in these people's backyards, okay? And the thing is that, you know, we're fishing in where we fish, they're like million-dollar homes, okay? They're these, you know, big, huge mansions right on the water. You know, they're right on the intercoastal waterway. And a lot of times be out there and, you know, dogs might start barking at us. And, you know, you try your best to be quiet and, you know, still, if somebody has a dog and you make one little noise, you know, they know that you're there. And we've actually had people come out and turn their, you know, say, hey, what are you doing? You know, and there's, you know, well, gee, we're just sitting here in our kayaks holding fishing poles, you know, because it's like, you know, nothing better to do. And, you know, they'll actually come out and, like, turn off their dock lights and, you know, tell us to go somewhere else. You know, it's really... It's crazy that somebody has a, you know, an attitude like that. You know, you're not trying to bother anybody. You're just fishing, you know. But I totally understand. And, you know, you should get permission if you're going on somebody's property or I don't know exactly how that law works there. But in Florida, the law is it cuts off at the seawall pretty much, you know. If they have, you know, and you don't want to go getting on somebody's dock. I mean, I understand that. People can be liable for that sort of thing, you know, if you get injured or something. But, you know, to you know, there was a time, and, you know, I'm not turning it into to political blog talk radio, but you know, there was a time when people were trying to get the laws to say, you know, in real estate law and property management laws that, you know, that they own the land underneath the water, you know, out to X amount of feet. And, you know, thank God they struck that down. Now, you know, I'm not trying to get all political. I leave the political stuff for other shows. You know, that's not my thing. I'm not going to, you know, sit here and start, you know, the Washington Post being the liberal mouthpiece for the drive-by media and the mouthpiece for the devil incarnate Harry Reid. No, I'm not. That's a totally different show. But anyway, what do you guys have anything like that up there? Do they own the land underneath the water or out to a certain point or anything like that?
For us up here, the biggest thing is that if the body of water is surrounded by your land, quote unquote, you own that body of water.
Ah.
So a pond, a small lake.
Right.
Now, if you own more than 4 miles of a riverbed or land on both sides of a river, you technically own that section. Now, with that, the game wardens have put out, or the environmental group, head honchos here, said, listen, you own that. It is your responsibility to keep it clean, keep it regulated, and everything else, or you can hand it over to us, we'll keep it clean, we'll keep it regulated, and you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people do.
Wow. Now, you said, Isaac, you're not allowed to fish up there at night?
Yeah, well, it's in Oregon. It kind of depends on what you're targeting. If you're looking for bass, walleye, catfish, you can fish at night. If you're in salt water, you can fish at night. But otherwise, trout, salmon, steelhead, sturgeon, you know, most of what we fish for up here, that's 1 hour before sunrise is opening, and then it closes 1 hour after sunset.
Wow, that's crazy. What reason do they have for that? I'm just curious. Is it a biological thing, or is it a cash grab?
I think it's just a management thing.
So
many of the fisheries are on a quota basis. By controlling people to fishing during daylight hours, they've got a better idea of what is being caught and what's being reported as catch.
Huh. Well, I've never heard of that. That's really weird. Okay, Mark, what would you say was your best fishing trip of 2010?
My best trip. It would have to be my mega bass day. It was the beginning of the pre-spawn around end of March of last year, or this year, still. And I got out, the water temps, we had a really warm snap where it got up in the 70s, and it really warmed this lake I fish on a lot really, really nicely. And I got out there and started thinking, you know, still cold water. So I'm throwing my slower baits, and I'm having a lot of bass just come up and pick it up and drop it real fast. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, you know, let me try something else. Pulled out a sexy shad rattle trap and commenced to the butt whooping. Bass over 18 inches on almost every cast off of, you know, rocky points. And then, you know, thinking, well, if they're hitting the rattle trap, let me try a spinnerbait. I mean, same thing, over and over and over. Then I went, you know what, let me try a topwater. And I found a just budding set of, you know, a little patch of lily pads, and took a Spro Frog, Spro Bonsai Frog, all black. Launched it out there, twitched it over the surface a couple of times, and was completely annihilated by my 12-pound bass.
Wow. And that was during the spawn? That's really strange.
Pre-spawn.
I mean, oh, pre-spawn, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say afterwards, you know, after they do the whole, you know, the whole, well, we're going to go ahead and, you know, do our thing, and they have their nest and they're protecting the nest, you know. A lot of times they'll act that way with the, you know, mouth it and drop it thing. But I've found that they will, you know, no matter what, afterwards, after the spawn and they're guarding the nest, they'll try to basically, I don't know if they're eating it or if they're just moving it, but they'll try to, I've had them try to fit like almost a hand-sized bluegill in their mouth, and they, like, I've watched them, you know, sit there and try to fit this thing in their mouth, you know, be a 3-pound bass trying to figure out a way to get past these fins, you know, or try to turn a bluegill around, you know, hand-sized bluegill, try to turn that thing around so it can get it, you know, down head first.
Yeah, one of my favorite techniques is taking a large, this is for the spawn, taking a really big tube bait and taking about a 2-ounce weight, shoving it inside the body cavity, and then gluing a rattle in there, taking the line, punching it through the nose, through the 2-ounce, it's a like a bullet weight,
yeah,
egg sinker, pulling all the way out, and then taking, that was doing this year, the floating swim baits, the articulated swim baits, the big ones, you know, the 8-inchers, and like what's it called? Like a bluegill color, sunfish color. And taking that, you trim the tube, the tanglers, kind of short, about a 1/2 inch long, with a couple of longer ones in there. And what happens is, when you throw that out, the 2-ounce weight with the tube hits the bottom. The floating swim bait, crankbait, whatever, floats up, and its nose is pointed towards that. So if you look at it and you're just take a quick glance, it looks like a crawfish pulling up, trying to defend itself from a sunfish. And you take it and you snap the rod tip, and it makes the sunfish or the bait shoot at the tube. So it looks like the sunfish is attacking the tube bait. And what
wow.
happens is you'll get these bass that'll come in and just kind of like watch it, and then completely annihilate the sunfish bait, the crankbait, swim bait, whatever. And I had a 12-inch bass eat a 8-inch swim bait last year.
Wow.
And he hit it so damn hard that it took the 2-ounce bait, and I was only 4 feet of water, took the tube bait and shot it in the up out of the water, and that's what set the hook. I didn't even have to do anything. He hit it so
wow.
hard.
No kidding.
It's a killer technique.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, Isaac, since you don't really, you know, fly fish and everything, do you ever go bass fishing up there?
What's that? I'm sorry?
You ever go bass fishing up there?
Oh, yeah,
like,
quite a bit.
Do you have largemouth up there, or is it mostly smallmouth?
It's mostly smallmouth in the rivers, and then you move into the lakes, and you'll find some largemouth and smallmouth bulls.
Yeah, and now I know the smallmouth get kind of big up in Oregon, but what about largemouth? I mean, you know, when I lived up north, you know, if you got a 12-inch bass, you know, you were killing it.
You know, it all depends on where you're fishing. Up here in the northern part of Oregon, I don't think I've seen many real largemouth. The largest I've ever caught was just under 3 pounds.
Oh, okay.
But you head down south, southern part of Oregon, you'll start getting 5, 6, 7 pound largemouth. There's a kid here, or down in the southern part of Oregon that I know, that just nails 7, 8 9-10 pound largemouth all year long. And he
just
picked one up yesterday, 37 degree water, and he picked up an almost 8 pound largemouth bass.
No kidding. I didn't know that they got that big around there. I thought they were just, you know, it was like, you know, once you get south of the Mason-Dixon line, that's when they start, you know, getting bigger because, you know, warmer water and, you know, they're active longer.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
you know,
awesome.
They're not targeted very heavily here. So in waters that they hold up in, they do very well. So it's just finding out what lakes and what ponds have them, and you'll find some big ones. Smallmouths, we do pretty well. A lake that I fish at throughout March through November when it's open holds the last couple state record smallmouth bass, all in the 8 pound range.
Wow. Man, that's awesome. Yeah. Now, I don't know exactly what the I can't tell you right now off the top of my head what the Florida state record is, but I know that we do get some pretty big bass. I was talking to Mark earlier about this, that, you know, in Florida we get some pretty big ones. I don't know what the state record is, but, you know, it's really funny because in Florida, with all the golf course ponds and, you know, apartment complex ponds and such, we go in, you know, they stock tilapia in there, you know, for weed control. And then they turn around and they'll put largemouth bass in there to keep the tilapia population at bay, you know, manageable. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding you, man. You can go to one of these, and a lot of times they have never seen any sort of a lure or a plastic worm or anything like that. So it's great. And you got like these, you know, monstrosity, you know, 8 and 10 pound bass sitting on, you know, in a golf course pond, you know, eating tilapia, you know, and they won't hesitate to wolf down a plastic worm or a tube bait or, you know, something, you know, crankbait, whatever. So,
right.
You know, that's a great, you know, thing here. And you can just fish from shore a lot of times, you know. But
that's where you'd use a fly rod and really have a blast.
Oh,
using a frog or a large like bug looking thing.
Yeah,
like a grasshopper. They love grasshoppers, boy.
Yeah, and another one of my favorite flies, you know, on the fly side of things, is it's called a crease fly. I don't know if you've ever seen that or not, but basically, it's just a triangular piece of foam, and you fold the thing over and glue it to death, and glue some eyes on it, you know, on a hook, and it's essentially a popper, and it's great because when you strip it across the surface, it like leaves a trail of bubbles behind it, you know. That's a great lure. I love that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. So we have Fun Sea Fish on our chat room here, and looks like he was updating his website and got sidetracked by our show here, and he's in Pennsylvania here, man. And let me just ask him if he knows Juan. Do you know Juan from I think he's Kayak Fishing PA.
Yeah, I know him via Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah? Me too, man. And also on this show, not this show, but the 8 o'clock show, he's always calling in and telling us good wintertime tactics for these, like, monstrosity smallmouth that he catches out on the Susquehanna River up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Isaac, since nothing ice is over up there, man, what do you guys do with you guys can't ice fish in the wintertime, man. What's the deal with that?
There's some ponds on the east side of the state. They ice fish. Eastern Washington, they ice fish. Of course, Idaho, there's a lot of ice fishing. but on the side of the state that I've always lived, I always live on the western sides. Yeah, no ice fishing. We just bundle up and hit the water like usual.
Awesome. Hey, now let me ask you this. I'm going to ask Isaac this. I already know what Mark's going to say. But Isaac, what would you say would be the best piece of kayak fishing gear that you bought in 2010?
Best piece of kayak fishing gear that I bought in 2010. You know, the only thing I bought for my kayak this year was a fish finder. That's it. I haven't bought any special for the kayak. I got that in January.
Does it work?
You know, I have never seen a fish on the fish finder. I just use it purely for structure, keep track of, it has built-in GPS, so I keep track of where I'm fishing, how many miles I paddle in a day, that's about it.
That's awesome.
So, and, you know, I love it mostly just to know how deep I'm fishing, what structure I can see, and, for the GPS functionality of it.
Hmm. Well, it looks like I got another call here, so let me jump over here real quick. Give me one second. Okay. Area code 502. You're on the air. And who is this?
It's Pam.
I'm sorry, who?
Pam.
Hey, how are you? From yakangler.com. How are you?
That'd be it. I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent so far. Excellent. You know, we're just sitting here talking about the year in review and, you know, what we're going to be doing in the upcoming year and everything. And what I was just asking everybody, and I know what Mark's going to say. Mark, the landing crew, he's really loves that slider, you know, the slider kayak, Yak Daddy slider. And right, Mark, is that like your favorite piece of kayak gear that you've run into this year?
It is. It's opened up a whole new, you know, level of what I can do. You know, with the yak, with the slider, you know, you can only fit, you know, two, maybe three Plano boxes in it. But Yak Daddy is working with a Flambeau and Ram Mount to get them on board also. And I got a Flambeau box, or Flambeau, however you say it. Don't probably correct me later. and I can put four of my Plano boxes of gear in one of these things. And what I've been doing lately is actually I bought three of these Flambeau boxes and putting them behind me like I usually would. And they strap down really nice and tight. And what happens is if I find a reason to switch tactics, even though one box has everything I need, but it doesn't have the color, and I know I have the color behind me, I just pull it out, put that one back, grab the other box, put it in there, and I'm not reaching behind me 150 times, because when you're bass fishing and you want to sneak up on that big old hog of a bass who's just sitting there just wallowing underneath that one little limb, the last thing you want to do is make a lot of noise, of ripples. They can feel the ripples in that lateral line. And to be able to just reach up, pull that up nice and quietly. You know, and I've added my modifications, a little bit of soundproofing on it. It is awesome. I mean, it's awesome. And it helps to stand up, too. If you're having trouble standing up, you can grab a hold of the side vents to help get you that first little bit to get your butt off the yak, get you up. I mean, it's awesome, period, you know, period.
And that's cool that you like it, you know. I mean, I think that's awesome. I think it's a great concept myself. I just don't have – I really don't have a use for it, you know. And I'm very much a minimalist type of, you know, not only in my personal life but in, you know, fishing as well. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going out there with a cane pole or anything like that, you know. but – you know, it just seemed like a little bit too much for me, you know, and for me, the more stuff I have to worry about, the more problems I have with stuff. So I just, you know, me personally, and I'm not knocking it, it looks like an awesome product, but, you know, me personally, I'm glad that you guys like it so much, man, and it just looked really, really good. It's great to be able to have all of your stuff, you know, within reach without being in the way, you know.
And here's the best thing about it is I've finally, you know, broke the mold. I don't have any rod holders behind me except for what was on my crate. I never have, because I always thought they would bump. I would bump into them. Now that I have this, I've removed the crate entirely, put two rod holders behind me, far enough back they don't get in my way. And when I lock everything down, I can flip the kayak, and I've done it recently, just to test it out. And I just to test it out with all my gear on it that I would usually carry in a well-controlled environment, and everything stayed put.
That's awesome.
I didn't lose anything.
Man.
So now
that's
I've
great.
Got it in my head that if everything is locked down like it should be and I, you know, need to do, I can flip my kayak and I don't lose the gear. I don't have to worry about the rods falling out of the tubes, and they're laying down behind me because I got the ram outs where they, you know, shoot
yeah.
straight out the back. So now I don't have to worry about am I in water, you know, shallow enough that if I roll it over, that pole is going to hit the ground. And I run G-Loomis. That's $250, $200, $300. Snap
oh,
it
yeah.
off, you know, quick as crap.
What kind of rod? What kind of rod?
G-Loomis.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear what you said. I was kind of like, yeah. Oh, yeah, man, those are definitely not cheap, man. Those are definitely awesome pieces of fishing equipment. Now, Pam, did you get the slider, the Yak Daddy slider?
No, I didn't. I've got a Hobie, and didn't see a whole lot of ways to put it on the Hobie.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the only problem.
Yeah,
we're working on that.
One of you guys did post a link to a Johnny Bar about a month ago that was on sale really cheap, and I went ahead and ordered two of those, and getting ready to start working on getting them mounted and getting some Scotty Rod mounts and other mounts to go across that, because it's going to reach over the top of the pedals. It's going to get everything up out of the way a little bit better. So
that's cool.
I mean, I love the Hobie and the ability to be able to pedal, but I also, just in watching other people fish, I also kind of miss the handiness of having a little dashboard right there in front of you. And I've been coming up with ways in my head to get a design going that'll bring things up on the sides maybe, but keep it out of the way of the rod and reels and keep it out of the way of the pedals. And I've got a cousin that does a lot of fabrication work, and he's working on a couple projects for me right now for outriggers, because I've got a sail for the Hobie, and I've already flipped the 3 times sailing.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Definitely. I mean, it's okay in the summertime when the water's nice and warm, but sometimes you don't want to go swimming. So.
Yeah, definitely, especially not this time of year. Oh, my God.
I think I'd
just, like, implode if I fell into ice cold water now after being in Florida for 25 years. Holy moly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I could stay in it either.
Yeah. So Isaac, do you have any use for a slider, Yak Daddy thing there for your kayak?
You know, with the way that my the Trident 15 that I fish out of all the time, I put a lot of thought into it and couldn't figure out how I could make it useful on that kayak. My other kayak, though, my Trident 11, my wife laughs because I don't fish out of that kayak much. Actually, I've never fished out of it. I could see a use for it in that kayak just because it's not modified the way that I have my Trident 15 modified, so I can easily see where I can easily bolt that up and make great use out of it.
Yeah. Now, the missus doesn't fish, right? She just kind of goes out and takes pictures and stuff like that, or does she fish?
A little. She fishes every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, it all depends on on the situation. She actually came out. She was my partner this year in the Northwest Kayak Anglers Dungeness Crab Tournament. So,
awesome.
She's done some crabbing out of the kayak.
Now, is this just like a West Coast thing? Because, I mean, we have like blue crab and things like that here, and you know, in the Keys they have lobster season. Now, I don't really know exactly about crabbing, so can you kind of give me a little rundown about how that works?
There's you know, the crabbing, I would imagine, is not a whole lot different than lobster fishing. There's two methods for the most part. There's crab rings, which are basically large, round nets. You put bait in the middle, you drop them down, you wait 20 minutes, you pull them up, and hope there's crab in them.
Okay.
That's the hands-on approach of crabbing, because you're constantly pulling those up and down and up and down all day long. The other method is with crab traps. Small cages, you know, if you've ever seen Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big giant traps like that, except they're only 2 feet square, so a lot smaller. And then, you know, you can bait those up, drop them, and go fishing for a couple hours, and then come back and check them. That's the way I like to do it. That's the hands-off approach.
Well, kind of does it, you know, it kind of catches the crab itself, you know. You don't always have to, you know, you don't have to sit there and fool around with it, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
That's kind of cool.
If there's crab to be had, they're in the trap already. So like I said, that's my preferred method.
So, okay, Pam, I know that you got a lot of stuff going on this year. You're going to Jacksonville, and you got the Lake Cumberland tournament coming up this year. What else you got going? Where are you going in 2011, man?
Well, like you said, Jacksonville in February. And then somewhere around the end of April, we were having Canoe Kentucky is putting on a kayak fishing tournament for us over at Frankfort. And then June, the first weekend of June, is when we're having the Cumberland, the second annual Cumberland fishing tournament. And then trying to think what else. We do have, it looks like our, we have a Kentucky Afield, our TV show here in the state that's been running since 1953. It's won a couple of Grammys, and I contacted them about 3 months ago and just emailed the host and first of all complimented him on his show, but then second of all said, and now let me say this to you, kayak fishing. And I proceeded to tell him about kayak fishing and how hot it is in the southern states, and it's now just now starting to really start to take off in Kentucky. And we've got this group, yakangler.com, and he called me 3 days later, very excited about doing a show. So sometime this spring we'll be doing a Kentucky Afield show.
Awesome.
The guys from Yak Angler and myself going out with Tim Farmer, the host of this show, and doing some kayak fishing. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it does sound. That sounds really cool. You have to let us know on the, you know, on Yak Angler, you know, when that's going down, and you know if we can, you know, where we can see it. You know,
we'll have to post a link.
Yeah, if they have
we'll
a website
post a
or something,
show. Yeah,
that'd be great, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Yak Angler guys are awesome. Me personally, I would love to go up for the Lake Cumberland tournament in June. But I don't know if I can or not. You know, because I mean, I don't think I'm going to be able to make the Jacksonville trip, and that's in Florida. You know, so how much of an idiot do I feel like? You know. But those guys are a lot of fun to fish with, man, and they're really good guys too. And I believe Chip is coming down to Jacksonville too. So,
oh great!
You know, so and I believe he was going to actually take a trip down to Sebastian to go fishing with Dee for a day or so one of those days around there. And I was hoping to shoot over to the East Coast myself and maybe get in on that little trip too. But we'll see. We'll have to see how that pans out.
It's a shame that's the way our trip worked out, because there's so many of you guys that are over in the Tampa area and stuff that, we should have hit that side instead of where we're going. So I don't know. But we did the best we could do trying to get it together. So.
Yeah, I know, and it's fine. You know, it's really hard to get a whole group of people like that together to go anywhere and camp, you know, in Florida, because
Yeah.
You know, especially that time of year, you know, late winter, early spring is really, it's probably one of the busiest times for the Florida state parks. And to find that, you know, to be able to find that many camping spots available is a chore, man. So
yeah.
I totally understand. So, well, it looks like we're getting to the end of our hour here. And what I'm going to do is... we're going to go down the line one more time, and I'm going to say Happy New Year to everybody now, because when I cue the music, I kind of get lost. So Happy New Year to everybody, and please have a safe and Happy New Year. Don't, make sure you be safe, man. That's the main aspect, and that's the important thing. And make sure that, like Mark says, wear your PFD. So, Isaac, what are you doing for New Year's, man?
Oh, for New Year's, I'm going to hang out with some friends and then going to bed by, this time of night. I get to work New Year's Day.
Oh, come on, these kids. These kids are only giving it a half a yay. Okay, that's awesome, man. So, Mark, what do you got going on for New Year's, buddy?
New Year's Eve is a going away party for my neighbor. They're moving to Guam, bastards. beginning of next year. And then New Year's Day, I was thinking about doing some fishing. We're going to have a little bit of a warm spell, so the bass should move up in the water column a little bit, come a little bit tighter to some shallower structure. They'll be feeding a little bit more. Hopefully, I'll be able to find that honey hole and tear them up.
That's all we ever want to find, man.
But,
all right, Pam, what are you doing?
That's the affliction.
Absolutely. Pam, what are you doing for New Year's?
Probably not too much. Hanging out with a couple of friends. I'm still surviving a sinus surgery I had about 10 days ago. So
man.
Just kind of keeping a low profile these days.
Yeah.
Trying to get over that. So.
I can understand that, man. That'll put you on your back. But
yeah.
That's cool. So just, kind of make sure that everybody's safe. And me, I'm going to my brother's house tomorrow and hanging out with my mom and my brother. And we're gonna eat some food and watch some movies for the most part, and maybe enjoy a couple of adult beverages. So,
awesome.
Well, that's about it. And I just want to wish everybody a Happy New Year. I'm Rob of Bad Back Hats DeVore, and you've been listening to the Kayak Fishing Radio Network, the West Coast Late Show time slot. So until next time, we'll be here next Thursday. And everybody have a good New Year's, a Happy New Year's, and be safe. Wear your PFD. See ya.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye.